Pleased now to be joined by Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. From design to installation, they've got you covered. And Brent joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Brent, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. Vance, hope you guys are doing well.
Doing fantastic. So tell us about Tennessee's latest commit. They get Rotarius Torrance from Hutchinson, Kansas Community College, a teammate of Tyon Evans, a running back. What do you know about Torrance?
Well, Jimmy, I think good athlete with a lot of length. I think the size is the first thing that jumps out at you about him. Probably got some rawness to him in terms of how much he could come in and compete for a job in the secondary right now, but certainly could come in and play special teams. And I think when you look at Tennessee in the secondary, real concerns, Jimmy, for a year from now. Theo Jackson's gone. Flowers is gone. Alante Taylor's gone. Kenneth George is gone. You know, suddenly that number, you're already kind of thin there. That number could be real thin a year from now. So yeah. I think that's why you've seen Tennessee go and take two defensive backs out of the transfer portal with multiple years of eligibility.
I had a guy call me the other day, and I wasn't sure of the answer, although I thought I did. He said, man, with all those transfers, transfer portal and the four they let go in the national letter of intent, he said, they're not going to have 70 players, are they? And I said, no, they will, because I think there were a number of seniors that returned, that were able to return. Numbers-wise, what do you see for Tennessee this fall?
Oh, I think they're going to come. They're going to be pretty good under the, or pretty decent under the 85. I mean, they're not going to be at, you know, catastrophic like 63, 65 or anything like that. But yeah, you know, they're going to be somewhere between 75 and 85, I think, Jimmy, with their numbers. And you know, that depends on obviously some walk-ons and how they handle some of that stuff. And the other thing you have to consider in there too is Tennessee going to try to self-impose anything for the fall, which could be some scholarship reductions, and that would be off of the 85 number, you know, which is something they're probably keeping in mind as well. But I don't think they're going to be fearful of pushing the 85 number in any way this fall.
Brent, because of those numbers that you talked about in the secondary, do you expect that Kamen Marley, who was an athlete in this 2021 class from North Carolina that could play either side of the ball, do you expect him to start in the secondary coming in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get here first and take a look at him and see. I mean, he's got to finish up some things academically to make sure that he's here. But, yeah, I think he starts out on the defensive side of the ball and sort of go from there. I mean, this staff did not evaluate him, did not pick him. That's not to say they dislike him, but they'll want to get their own evaluation of him. And there's no real tape to watch because they didn't play football this fall in North Carolina. So kind of where is he with essentially a year off from ball, which is what it kind of boils down to for them. So you know, we'll see, but I think definitely he's going to start on the defensive side of the ball.
And what do you think of Amari McNeil starting on the defensive line, if that's the way it plays out?
Well, I mean, I think that was always the plan, you know, that he was going to get a look-see there. I think most believe he's going to end up being an offensive lineman when it's all said and done. But I think the recruiting plan was a look-see on the defensive line, and then, you know, go from there. So we've certainly through the year seen guys get looks on that side of the ball and end up on the other side, either after a year or sometimes in the middle of fall camp. So I think ultimately he ends up an offensive player, but not surprised he's starting out on he will start out on defense.
Brent, we saw some over-unders that have been issued, and this there it's been out there before. But anyway, DraftKings put Tennessee's over-under at 6 wins. Do you think that's a pretty accurate number?
Yeah, I think so, Jimmy. When you look at it, I don't, let me put two couches on that. One, obviously that's taking into account the belief they're going to get better quarterback play than they got a year ago. Okay, that's, you know, that's the first given. The second given is that you don't have a rash of injuries because this team does not have a ton of depth. But if you get somewhat stabilized at quarterback and you stay healthy, you should win for sure 3 of your 4 non-conference games. I think the Pittsburgh game could go either way. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, I think, South Carolina, Kentucky, Vanderbilt are all games that you can certainly say, well, Tennessee's got a real shot at winning those games, or in some cases may even be favored to win them. South Carolina's got a first-year head coach, first-time head coach in Shane Beamer. You got a new head coach at Notre Dame, from Notre Dame to Vanderbilt, and then you know Kentucky's changing offenses. And what does that look like? I mean, can they really adapt to some? Do they have the personnel to do kind of what they want to do on offense? So when you start adding that up, you can look at this team and say, there are seven games there that they are very capable of winning that you would say, that's not an upset. That's not a shock. That's not going to Auburn 2 years ago or 3 years ago and beating the Tigers. Those are very winnable games. And, yeah, I mean, I think you can look at that and see six in there. I don't think that would be a stunner if that were the case.
When Mike Leach left Washington State to go to Mississippi State, a lot of people felt like, well, whoever the quarterback is, he's going to put up big numbers. Well, in game one, there was a quarterback that put up big numbers, and then they were a little bit iffy after that as teams kind of figured things out. With Josh Heupel, his quarterbacks typically have put up big numbers. Are you pretty confident that Tennessee at least has enough skill in the quarterback room that whoever wins the job will put up good numbers?
Well, yeah, I mean, based on Heupel's history, I would say that. I know that's contrary, you know, that contradicts what you're saying, because based on Mike Leach's history, why would you not, right? Yes. But Josh Heupel's done it in this league. His offense, he's used this offense in this league before when he was at Missouri. They were effective when he had Drew Locke, who, you know, could vertically get the ball down the field, and they could do some things there. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a little bit more confidence with Josh Heupel because of the more recent SEC experience and the fact that you've seen this offense work with him and you're seeing this offense work in this league. I think Heupel's offense is going to be much more like Ole Miss's offense than Mississippi State's. Mississippi State's got a little bit more of a West Coast deal to it, Jimmy. There's, you know, some flat routes and they go vertical some, but it's a little bit different in terms of kind of some of the attacking stuff really down the field on a consistent basis. I think because of the Lebby influence at Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin and the fact that Lebby was with Josh Heupel, I think this is going to feel a little bit more like what Ole Miss is trying to do offensively than even what Mississippi State's trying to do offensively.
Brent, I know there's a lot of dynamics, as you were talking about earlier, with this coaching staff not – you know, evaluating some of the guys that were in this class and including the summer enrollees. Is there one of the summer enrollees that you think, obviously if they get on campus, that you think maybe has the best chance to maybe contribute in some form or fashion for this team this year?
I want to see the McGee kid because I'm not sold on where Tennessee's at completely in the secondary. You know, I mean, I like Warren Burrell. I think he's got some talent, but what does it look like? What are they going to do at nickel? You know, there's some things there. So in terms of guys who aren't here, I think McGee is going to be would be near, you know, kind of near the top of that list, you know, for me, for where things are. Now, you know, some of these other guys, you know, I think the rest, not McGee, I mean Deshaun Rucker. Holy crap, I'm talking about a guy that decommitted. Sorry, from a year ago. I meant Deshaun Rucker.
From Tallahassee,
That is a guy I'm interested in seeing. I mean, the rest of the guys, you know, I mean, Trinity Bell is, he's coming off an ACL, you know, so you don't know where he's at. The rest of these guys are kind of here. I mean, what's Jeremiah Crawford, who is a late addition? What does he look like as an offensive lineman? Could he come in and be a factor at the tackle position? I don't know. You know, Julian Nixon, I think, is ultimately going to be a tight end. I think he will come in and be down the depth chart a little bit at tight end with some of the guys that they had in the spring. So if you're looking for a guy, that would be where I would start. Would be, you know, Deshaun Rucker.
Hey, of all the guys that left in the transfer portal at Tennessee, and a lot of them, a number of them, more productive guys had great landing spots, is there one that you would say you think is going to have the best year this year and maybe have the best season as one of those former Vols via the transfer portal?
Well, I think Eric Gray, because of the offense that Lincoln Riley runs and the fact that he's in a league where the defense is typically not as potent as it is in the SEC. I think he could put up big numbers. I think the biggest loss for Tennessee is Key Lawrence. I think Key Lawrence would be the nickelback for Tennessee right now and would be an anchor for Tennessee in the secondary. And that's not to say Eric Gray can't play. That's not to say Wanya Morris is not playing. But when you look at this roster and you kind of look at things, to me, the loss of Key Lawrence is really significant and probably not talked about enough because everybody focuses on Henry. And I understand that because he started for 2 years at Tennessee. And, you know, there's a void there with him going. But I think they're really going to miss Key Lawrence because I think Key Lawrence is going to have a really good career at Oklahoma. And I think he would have had a really good career at Tennessee. I think he's very talented.
Our guest, Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com, is a parent brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're on with Brent Hubbs.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, Steve.
Hey. Brent, I'm sure you've already talked about it, but what about the portal? What's left out there that Tennessee might take?
Steve, I think they're done in this class with the portal, unless somebody that they have planning on coming in doesn't get in school or something crazy like that happens,
right,
which I would expect. I think where their numbers are, I think if they take anybody else, you're going to be counting forward and taking away from next year's class. So
right.
I don't think they're going to take anybody else. I would be really surprised if they did.
Right. Right. Well, okay. Do you think the portal people that coming through the portal supposed to be the UT? Do you think it's really promising group as a whole? Because I do think that that they can, you know, have the potential to be really good. What do you think about that?
Well, Steve, I think they've addressed some important needs. I'm a little surprised they took the Peyton kid just because of where they were at receiver.
Right.
But we talked about it a little bit earlier with the number of defensive backs they're going to lose in the next year or so. I think it was important to get a couple guys there with multiple years. I like the Terry kid from Kansas. I don't know him. I mean, I've looked at his numbers. I like the fact that here's a guy that lost a bunch of weight and really morphed into a much better player than he was in high school after playing just 1 year of high school ball. So
right.
I think he liked his mental makeup. They had to get linebackers. And they've gone and gotten a very productive linebacker from Texas. And then the kid that they got from Michigan, you know, may not be ready right now, but he's a guy who's going to help them for sure on special teams. And because of his athletic ability in space, may be able to help them on the field this fall for sure. At least they create some competition there with those two guys to go with Roman Harrison and Banks. And then we'll see if Aaron Beasley is going to get back on this team or not.
Right. Okay. Well, fellas, nice weather today, isn't it?
Lovely.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Steve, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Brent, any update on the suspended players? We asked Heupel about that a while back, and he said they had to earn their way back. Any update on them?
I fully expect when Tennessee goes to their official full summer workouts next week, I think Aaron Willis and Caden Salter are going to be a part of that. You know, Beasley's got a court date, Jimmy, in mid to late June, and that may be a situation where, his future with the program will depend on sort of what comes out of that court date and that hearing there. So, but I think Salter and Willis are going to be back next week officially.
Obviously, this puts Salter a little bit behind the eight ball, not going through the spring. Do you think he has a chance to win the job?
Well, I don't know. I've not seen him. I mean, he's clearly, he clearly cost himself this spring, and there's no question that's a setback. There's no way he's where Harrison Bailey, Brian Maurer, Hendon Hooker, is in this competition. But you know what? A lot of people think Joe Milton's going to come in and maybe win this job. He's behind. He didn't go through spring. So I think you're talking about a wide open competition to start. I think the one story or the interesting part of the quarterback competition, how quick do they pare it down? Because here's the thing, Jimmy. I'm all about coaches talking about we give everybody equal reps. There's no way if that quarterback room's that full, everybody's going to be able to get equal reps for very long in fall camp, and you're going to get yourself ready to play. You're going to have to define your pecking order, at least who the top three are to compete for the starting job, and then get to the top two quickly who are competing for that starting job. You cannot make that, I don't think, an open competition with equal reps for five scholarship guys.
Brent, how do you feel about Tennessee's kicking game?
You know, I like McGrath in the spring. I thought he kicked it fine. I think JT Carver could compete there. I think they're fine at punter. But I mean, I think they're solid there. I don't think there's a huge concern or a huge drop off with where they are in kicking the ball. I mean, obviously Samaglia struggled mightily last year, so I don't think there's going to be a drop off from that. And you know, who's going to be the return guys? I think that's, you know, we don't know. There's some, you know, different candidates back there, but who do they settle in with those guys? And, you know, is a guy like Jimmy Holiday going to be a punt returner? I don't know. He's got a lot of wiggle. What do they want to do at the kickoff return game? Does Jalen Wright get a look back there? What does Josh Heupel want to look at? What kind of athlete does he want to put back there? Is he a guy who puts receivers back there? Does he put running backs back there? You know, every coach kind of handles that differently. You know, I think the one concern is you're going to probably have to play more starters on special teams and coverage units than you probably want to play given your depth situation. But there's nothing anybody can do about that. That's just where Tennessee is right now.
Brent, what are some of the important dates and maybe specific camps to keep track of for our listeners that are tracking that stuff with that really kicking into high gear?
Yeah, it kicks in on Tuesday. Tennessee will have their first camp on June the 1st. Then they'll have what they're going to call a night at Neyland on Friday evening the 4th to kind of kick things off. That's an important camp where I think a good number of in-state prospects are going to come in. Some other guys are going to come in. And then I think the other story is going to be basically every weekend in June because Tennessee's going to have a good number of official visitors in town. When you talk about Addison Nichols on the offensive line, he'll be in for one weekend. Ryan Brubaker, who's an offensive tackle prospect from up in Pennsylvania, he's going to be in for a visit weekend officially. There's a couple of running backs who may be in officially. You know, I think Tennessee may go all the way up to, you know, 18 to 24 official visitors in the month of June when it's all said and done. So that's going to be every bit as important as the camps are. The camps are going to be about the class of 23, 24, but in terms of class of 22, it's going to be about official visitors.
Let's go back to the phones where Craig is our next caller. Craig, you're on with Brent Hubbs.
Hey, Brent. My follow-up to that portal is the people that are on the portal right now, the UT players that are on the portal, are they going to be welcome back to the team, or are they gone? And I'll hang up and listen.
They're gone. There's not anybody in the portal that, I mean, all those guys that Tennessee would quite frankly want to have back are all elsewhere. Samaglia is at Georgia Tech. You've got the trio of guys at Oklahoma. Henry has gone to Alabama. Crouch is at Michigan State. Jimmy, who am I missing?
Chandler to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Chandler to North Carolina. Yeah. I mean, all those guys are settled in at their new place. So there's nobody that's in the portal that's going to return to Tennessee. So I think that's, you know, at this point, if you're still in the portal and June 1st is Tuesday and summer camps are starting everywhere, you got some concerns about where you're going to play college football in the fall. If you're a kid in the portal right now and you don't have a home yet, you probably ought to be a little bit nervous because you're probably not going to land at the level of school you thought you were going to land at.
That's Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. From design to installation, they got you covered. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. When we come back, we'll have more with Brent. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Our guest, Brent Hubbs, BallQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to the phones where Michael is our next caller. Michael, you're on with Brent Hubbs.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Fine, Michael.
Listen, I have a question. I read an article by a gentleman. His name is Ramsey. He's out of Nashville. And he was saying that Texas A&M will probably try and get Vitello, and if they offer Vitello, he'd be crazy not to go there. Have you read that article, and do you think Vitello is going to see after what he's building?
Vince, what do you think? Do you think Vitello would be interested in A&M?
Brent, go ahead.
Well, I mean, go ahead, Vince. You got a better, you know better about that. I mean, I've said for 6 weeks that Vitello is going to be at the top of A&M's wish list if they make a coaching change, and they've made a coaching change, and he's going to be at the top of that wish list.
Yeah, no doubt. Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball said that he knows that Tony Vitello is at or near the top of their wish list. So the fact that another school and a big school with a lot of money would come after Tony Vitello, that's not a surprise or the question. The question is what does Tennessee do to keep Tony Vitello? And I'm with you, Jimmy. You and John talked about it earlier. I think that he is really happy here. And if Tennessee responds with obviously a contract which would take care of his staff, give them some stability and money that they deserve for being loyal to Tony Vitello, because they've had opportunities to go on to other gigs, and the facilities, there's a commitment to improving and enhancing those drastically, I think he would stay if Tennessee has that response. Brent, the question is what would Tennessee respond with to Tony Vitello to keep him here at Tennessee?
Here's another part of that.
I agree with you 100% on all of that. Go ahead, Jimmy. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was just going to say, in terms of the facilities, what I think is interesting is, would Tony Vitello be okay with an 8,000-seat downtown facility being built and playing SEC games there, as opposed to expanding, enlarging, and skyboxes and all that for Lindsey Nelson? And then the other part of that is just playing your non-conference games at Lindsey Nelson and your SEC games at the 8,000-seat arena. He may not like that. That may not be his vision or his plan or what he would give a thumbs up to. I don't know what his thoughts are on that, Brent.
Yeah, I think his preference would be to stay on campus. Just in talking to some people, I think that's where he would tend to want to go. Now, what's interesting is the guy who's going to build the downtown ballpark is the president of the University of Tennessee.
Yes.
You know, so that's an interesting dynamic there. You know, that he says, hey, we'll just play it at the downtown ballpark. But if your baseball coach says no, then Danny White's in a little bit of an interesting spot. Is he going to go to the guy who hired him and says, hey, we can't get that done with this guy, blah, 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 blah? I think most coaches want an on-campus facility for a couple of reasons. One, in recruiting, I think it's a big deal. Hey, you're telling guys, hey, you don't have to get in your car and drive to the ballpark for a game. Okay, everything we need is right here. You know, we don't have, all right, let's take a practice. We got to practice over here, and then we're going to play over there, that type of thing. I don't think that's something that's the most appealing out there. Everybody else in the SEC has built ballparks and has renovated ballparks and has really nice ballparks. So I think from the competition there, that's part of it. And what I was going to say is, I think if you're going to commit to baseball, regardless, obviously you're doing it with the hopes of keeping Tony Vitello, but at some point, Vince, they're going to have to fix the stadium, or they're going to have to change venues in the stadium. The downtown thing is tough because you can't alter the schedule all the time and pick up a game here or do that. Sometimes you got to share practice space. All that can be challenging. But at some point, if you're Tennessee, you cannot continue to try to compete at the highest level in the SEC with the facilities that you're playing with right now. Whether Tony Vitello's the coach or somebody else is the coach, you're just not going to be able to continue on that track, in my opinion.
Well, and all these games are available for people, college baseball fans, recruits, their families, all of them to see these games around the league. And you get to see what everybody else has in terms of home ballparks. And Tennessee cannot compete with that. They probably have the 13th in the league in facilities, only ahead of Missouri. So Texas A&M, they're committing $30 million to enhance their facilities. They're already ahead of Tennessee's right now. So they have to improve it. The luxury boxes are big. So many things. And I think Tennessee fans, hopefully that Arkansas series really showed Danny White, I'm sure he already knew, but just ingrained it even more, that if you enhance that fan experience and give Tony Vitello ammunition to compete in recruiting, then the fans will respond, and then you can make that a great success. But they got to commit the dollars to it. And I know the plan is out there. It's just a matter of what they promised to Tony Vitello, and is that good enough for him to say, I trust you, I'll stay.
Another intriguing part of this equation is they don't have enough money to finish the Neyland renovations.
Yeah.
And so are you going to take whatever money you might have used for that to apply it to baseball, which doesn't make money?
Got to have money earmarked,
well, they're
right?
They're a long, long ways from having enough money to do a Neyland Stadium renovation. Long, long ways. I mean, that's going to cost, you know, lots and lots of money to do that. But, you know, again, if you're not going to change, and remember this about Danny White, this is not new, you know, territory for him. He was a part of the baseball project at Ole Miss. He headed that project up in terms of fundraising. You know, he was overseeing baseball at that point, and he was very hands-on in putting that stadium project together and its completion at Ole Miss. So this is not new to him. He's been through recently kind of the balancing act of investment into a sport that doesn't yield you a ton of money. Now, with some club seats, you got a chance to help yourself and pay some of your debt that way. And they put a pretty good plan together at Ole Miss. So can he put a plan like that together at Tennessee? We'll see. You know, he started, you know, with just some general fundraising. How many donors does Tony Vitello know who's going to come and say, hey, I'm earmarking some cash for this, right? I mean, they didn't have just the cash laying around for the artificial surface that they put in. They got donor help for that as well. So, how much has Tony Vitello kind of worked at the last couple of years to help himself to maybe get some commitments from some people directly towards baseball? I don't know the answer to that. I know he's got some pretty good relationships with some donors out there, though.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And from Tennessee's perspective, guys, they can't lose Tony Vitello. They need to do whatever they can to keep him. So we'll see where that goes. Michael, we appreciate the phone call. When we come back, we'll have more with Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. From design to installation, they got you covered. Brent joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. We come to you from Weigel's, that is in Alcoa at Hunter's Crossing. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Brent Hubbs, VolQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. And brought to you by Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900.
Brent, I got a source that tells me that the Gibbs baseball team is pretty good. 3-0 in the state AA baseball tournament. Beat Greenbrier today 11-0. And now we'll play the winner of Nolensville and Pigeon Forge in tomorrow's championship game. How about those Gibbs Eagles?
That's a good baseball team. I think the two best teams in AA in the state are Pigeon Forge and Gibbs. They've only played each other, I think, three times this year, and two in the regular season, and they played for the district tournament championship. And they played in the region, so I guess they played four times. And so they've gone back and forth all season long. And this is a Gibbs team that's got some good young talent on it. They've got some veteran players. And the interesting thing about them is they found the bats yesterday. They kind of broke out against Covington. They beat Watertown in the first game, I think 4-3 or 3-2. Then the bats kind of came alive late yesterday against Covington, and it carried over through today. Now, the question that everybody has is, do you have enough pitching in the championship game? And that'll be the challenge for both Tennessee and Pigeon Forge. The Loy kid from Pigeon Forge, who's a Tennessee commit as a sophomore left-handed pitcher, is fantastic. He threw yesterday for Pigeon Forge against a pitcher who's a Vanderbilt commit, and so Pigeon Forge used him yesterday to advance and to get to this point.
So which team is who's going to have enough pitching left to go through a championship game, which might feature quite a few runs? I would say Coach Davis at Gibbs is most pleased with the fact that that his bats have woke up in the last 8 or 9 innings of baseball in Murfreesboro. But fun to watch. Good group of kids who I've gotten to know and know pretty well because my son knows all of them and tickled to death for them. We've got the softball team playing right now. They're trying to stay alive out of the loser's bracket. So pretty good for the old alma mater.
Let's go back to the phones where Keith is our next caller. Keith, you're on with Brent Hubbs.
Hey, guys. Hey, Brent.
Hey, Keith. What's up, Keith?
Hey, listen, back in 2016, one of the things that goes unnoticed is how many field goals that we missed. And I think it was 4 in Alabama game, 3 at Florida, blah, blah, blah. So I think the kicking game is well overlooked in these odds. I think we're going to win 6. We've got 2 or 3 more games that are – we finally hired a coach that believes in offense, and hopefully he doesn't believe in wearing those unlucky black cleats. But anyway, I want to ask you, are these field goal kickers good? And do you think that – why did our great field goal kicker from 2 years ago have such a bad year last year? I'd like to listen to what you have to say about that.
Sure, Keith. Good question on Brent Somaglia. I don't know the answer to it. I think he was at one point a little bit banged up. I think COVID, you know, kind of messed with him a little bit mentally. There was a point in time there was some talk that he might even opt out early in the year last year. But he had some health things going on as well. Then technique got wayward. And, you know, kickers are like golfers. I mean, when you kind of lose it, sometimes you kind of lose it. And he lost it, and it's pretty remarkable. It's one of the bigger surprises that, Jimmy, we've seen the last few years, just how 180-degree opposite he was from the previous year. As for the current kickers, the McGrath kid who's transferring in from Southern Cal, I think is a quality kicker who's going to be fine, who's going to, you know, give Tennessee some experience there, and we'll see how much JT Carver pushes him in fall camp.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got just a little bit of time left for Tim. Tim, you're on with Brent Hubbs.
Hey, guys. How you doing today? I wanted to get in on quick before I got Brent out of the way. Hey, Brent, I wanted to say good job talking about that Gibbs baseball team right there. My nephew plays for that bunch. That's Big Ron Claiborne. Pitched for that team. He's an awesome player, yes. I got to finally get to see a game, and it was against Mason Forge. And we took that game, and I was real happy to see all that go down. He gave 5 strong innings against them, so I'm hoping that he'll get to do that again probably for that state championship. So I'd love to see it. I can't be there, but I got my sister letting me know what's going on. So I'm really hoping to get a lot of stuff going on. Hope they'll keep me up to date while I'm doing all these flowers out here today. So there you go. Do you happen to know about Big Ron?
Yeah,
have you heard of him?
Yeah, I don't know who all they've pitched. Yes, I've heard of him, but I don't know who all they've pitched this week to this point. It's one of those deals. I didn't text anybody good luck before it started, and so I don't want to jinx anybody by texting good luck and getting any information while they're in the middle of a run right now. Nobody's going to blame me for anything. So I'm following it from afar right now for those guys. I don't want to be that guy. So I'm going to stay away. I was doing some things yesterday during the Alabama game and hadn't really watched it. I was following it, following the updates on Twitter and everything else. And so I sat down and I gotten home and gotten, you know, to where I was doing some work. I said, all right, I'm going to pull up and watch this game. And I pull it up and Tennessee's got a runner at third in the ninth with nobody out, and then it goes to extra innings. So I guess I'm the jinx of that one yesterday as well. So people can blame me for the base running interference call. That wasn't base running interference. So I'm going to do my best not to jinx anybody right now.
Brent, what could we look forward to on BallQuest?
Well, we've got our mailbag podcast is up now. Of course, we got the update on the start times for everybody as well. We'll have some baseball coverage coming up throughout the rest of the day and tomorrow. We got the War Room tomorrow. Plenty of recruiting coverage as well throughout the weekend. And, of course, on Tuesday, the next step towards normalcy returns in college football from a recruiting standpoint as prospects can come on campus for official visits, unofficial visits, and camp So it'll get back to normal starting on June 1st. It'll be a hectic, hectic month for Tennessee and everybody else around the country. So we'll get you ready for that as well.
All right. Hey, Brent, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
See you, Brent.
All right, you guys too. Everybody be safe out there.
All right. That's Brent Hubbs with VolQuest.com. His appearance brought to you by Diversified Enclosures and Screens. From design to installation, they got you covered. He joined us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.